Warning: The Mended Futures podcast contains stories told by guests that may be sensitive to some people. Viewer and listener discretion is advised. The opinions expressed by guests do not reflect the views of the hosts and/or producers of this podcast.
We are talking to a senior leader from 518 Family Services, and the senior leaders here have some things in common.
They do. They sure do.
So there is a personal history with foster care and adoption. And today we hear Jim Herron's journey from a minister to a counselor and how
director.
Director. And now
Chief Strategy Officer.
Yes. What a cool title. And his personal history as a dad to biological foster and adoptive children. It was a really neat show.
He's easy to listen to, so we hope you enjoy.
Hey, Taylor.
Hey.
It is really cold outside, but we have someone really warm in the studio today.
He just warms the space right up.
Yes?
Jim.
Stop it.
So tell the people who you are.
Well, I'm Jim Herron. I'm the Chief Strategy Officer with 518, and it's good to be here. Good to see you, Taylor and Allison.
Strategy Officer.
Yeah, that sounds pretty ominous, doesn't it?
I'm always a little bit jealous of that title. How did you get that title?
I like that title, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. It could kind of mean anything.
Right. Yeah, you're like, actually, this is my organization.
Right, this is my title.
I can kind of do whatever I want.
Well, there was strategy, something that I enjoy. Just kind of a natural thing. I look at things strategically, and I probably use that word pretty constantly. And all the work I was doing around here with Hope for Tomorrow, the counseling ministry before it became 518 Counseling. And so when the chief officers, the senior leaders, were looking at how to add to their team, they wanted some of that. And so they invited me to join them and to kind of bring some of that kind of thinking, that perspective of making sure that what we're doing right now is moving us in the right direction. Mm-hmm. So kind of just pick the title, what would fit that or what would describe that? And so they came up with Chief Strategy Officer.
How long did you work for 518 before you became a chief officer?
I was with, it was Patrick Henry Family Services then, of course, was with Patrick Henry Family Services, Director of Hope for Tomorrow Counseling for 5 years. And then I've been in this role now for three and a half.
Wow. So, folks who are listening or watching will not understand that it's probably a big deal for you to be behind the microphone. You are strategic, and I would say you're usually quite introverted.
The elusive chief strategy officer.
I am introverted, that's right, and these kinds of things are a little awkward for me. I love working behind the scenes. I love having the big picture. I see myself as empowering and equipping, motivating other people. But not an out front extroverted kind of person.
When you do take the opportunity, it's meaningful. I've seen you present at least once in front of a big crowd, and you do a good job with it, even if you don't love it.
Yeah, well, thank you. Appreciate that. And it's kind of ironic. I'm an ordained minister, and for many years preached every Sunday and really enjoy that. I think one of the things that's significant about that is I really like to think through things and have my thoughts together. And you can see how preaching allows for that. And so situation like this doesn't. I haven't been able to think through this and know what to say. So that's a little different. But even preaching was draining, you mm-hmm. know, because for an introvert, any kind of outward kind of expression, mm-hmm. You know, it just takes a lot of energy. But really enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. Actually was in ministry for 32 years. So that's, you know, it was a career.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you're definitely still in ministry if you lead this organization.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's the way I view it is, well, I knew I wanted to be in ministry in high school. And so that was the plan. Not sure exactly what that would look like or where that would go. But the kind of the natural path then was after I graduated from high school, I went to Bible college. And when I graduated from Bible college, then went into youth ministry and then from youth ministry into a preaching ministry. One of the things that I was committed to, though, was to make a commitment with the church and stay with the church for 32 years, I only served in 3 churches.
Wow.
So they were kind of extended periods of time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And for the last, 14 years or so, I was part-time because that's when I got licensed as a licensed professional counselor. So I was doing professional counseling and on staff with the church.
Mm. How do you sort of make, not the jump because you were doing them at the same time, but what is the transition or journey from a pastoring ministerial role to a licensed professional counselor?
Yeah, and it's interesting. You got to remember the context. We're talking about it in the 90s, mm-hmm. and some of my colleagues even worded as I was leaving the ministry, but I didn't see it that way at all. In fact, when I look back, I feel like God was preparing that path all along. When I went to Bible college, there was the Bible college I went to, Cincinnati Bible College, did not have a clinical training program, so there wasn't a specific way to become a Christian counseling and counselor in their program. But my degree allowed for a lot of electives, so I took everything I could about psychology and about counseling and pastoral counseling. And then in the early years of my ministry, working with youth and working with families, I was doing a lot of pastoral mm-hmm. counseling and felt like I was being effective and helpful, but I had this sense that, you know, it would be good if I really knew what I was doing. Mm-hmm. So I went then, late 80s, went to Virginia Tech and got a second master's degree mm-hmm. in family and child development, which then allowed me the foundation to move towards licensure. And licensure wasn't particularly the goal. The goal was to be able to do this better and mm-hmm. to be more helpful, and just kind of led in that direction. And then looking back, it kind of became clear this is what God kind of had in mind all along. And so that's where I really needed to be spending my time and energy.
Hmm. That's interesting that decades into your career, you sort of find out in hindsight that you're like, oh, God sort of had this off the beaten path plan in mind.
Yeah. And, you know, it's different for different people. I'm not saying my path is what other people's paths should be. But at times there were people say, well, you know, if you knew you were going to be a professional counselor, you could have just done that right out of college and do that. But I think the journey, the path has made things stronger, more effective. I think being a minister helped me be a better counselor. I think being a counselor helped me more effectively in a professional minister role. And so I see God's hand in all of that. However, and you two probably have experienced this too, it's not in the moment that you realize what God mm-hmm. is doing. Mm-hmm. It's when you get down the road and you look back and it's kind of like, oh, that was what that was about. Mm-hmm. In fact, coming to Patrick Henry Family Services 518 was that kind of experience for
really?
Me. Because when you look at my personal experience, married, we have 3 biological children. We have 3 that we adopted. We did foster care for nearly 20 years. The children that we adopted each had special needs. Mm-hmm. And then in located ministry as a youth minister and then as a preaching minister, senior minister of his staff, had that experience. Private practice, had the experience of building that and creating that. And then I joined a group and helped grow the group. And so I come here where I can use all of those experiences. The experience of being a father, a foster father, an adopted father, managing, helping people with special needs, ministry, very specific ministry, but also building a business and managing that. So, you know, it's like, okay, God, I see now what all that was about. Mm-hmm. And it's brought me to this point.
It's an impressive resume.
Right.
Well, a lot of years, yeah. You know. Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about your personal experience with being a father, a foster father, adoptive father, and how that did prepare you for your role now.
Yeah, it's there's a lot of nuance to that, a lot of layers, if you will. My wife's degree was in social work. Mm-hmm. And, of course, as I said, I went to Bible college, and so my focus was located ministry. But when our first child was born, so our oldest, we decided it would be, we wanted my wife to be able to stay at home. And yet we both had this passion for family, for children. I grew up in a family with five kids. She grew up in a family with six. Mm. Anyway, foster care just kind of seemed natural. And so that we made that commitment in the early 80s, we'll do foster care. We were living in Ohio at the time. It just kind of made sense. It was a form of ministry, and it mm-hmm. was our values. And this isn't a criticism. I think it's just a matter of the timing. In those days, in that setting, there was very little training for foster care. So we started foster care kind of as an idea. And so we look back now and see lots of things that, man, I wish I knew then what I know now. But we did a lot of placements. We were willing to say yes. We were the ones that often said yes. So we got sibling groups when no one else would take sibling groups. We did a lot of short-term emergency placements where we'd get a call in the middle of the night and, you know, they'd bring a child to us that we would keep safe for a few days. But then we also did some long-term. We had foster children who were with us for 2 or 3 years. And that takes you through other, seasons, if mm-hmm. you will, because they go back and visit parents, and then they have to come back into care. And so we learned a lot, and it was there was a lot of messiness, difficulties.
Didn't you guys do like over 50 placements, something yeah. like that?
And we didn't, I don't think we intended to really like keep track or, mm-hmm. or you know, mm-hmm. tally. But at one point there was a meeting, a program, and the social services was hosting and you know, recognizing foster parents, and they're the ones that said that we had done 50 placements, mm-hmm. and then we did some after that. So wow. Yeah, 50 plus.
That's big.
Wow.
Yeah, and I wasn't sure how many years, but I was looking at the, kind of the timeline the other day, and it was 18 and a half years. Mm. Only reason we stopped was with the last adoption, the third adoption, that made six kids in the home. Mm-hmm. And, and the oldest one was 14 and the youngest one was like three. Mm-hmm. That would became, you know, our focus rather than continuing doing foster care. Right. Mm.
And we've talked to a few foster and adoptive parents as guests, and it's always interesting to hear each family's individual journey. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's, you know, only adoptive or only fostering. Sometimes there are biological children. How do you navigate and balance the difference between being a biological parent and a foster parent and an adoptive parent? Do you see those roles? Is dad different, or is dad always the same?
Of course, and I try for Dad to always be the same, but with a lot of children, different situations, they're on different paths. You treat them differently. You know, that there's the idea that you treat them all the same. Well, no, you love them all the same. Mm. But because you love them, then it's my responsibility as Dad to know what they need in this moment. Now, they don't always get that because mm-hmm. they look at it as like you're, you know, treating them differently than me or whatever. But so to answer your question, in my mind, they were always my kids and trying to do the best to meet their needs right where they're at. And you've probably heard this through the years. Hear people say, well, you know, I'm not sure how I would be able to do foster care because they would leave. You know, mm-hmm. you're loving them and then they leave. And I got to tell you, that's the hardest thing. That is really hard. It's joyful when they're leaving and going to a good place, a good permanent place, but often they don't, or you don't know, or at least in those early days, they would often come back and forth. But we always looked at it as God has called us to take care of this child, love this child, nurture this child in this moment, right where they need it. And then we remind ourselves that's actually true for our biological children. Mm. We really have no idea how many years we're going to have with them. I mean, of course, we hope and pray mm-hmm. that we'll walk with them through their life, but you don't know. Mm-hmm. So it's loving them and meeting their needs and taking care of them today.
Did serving children with special needs come into your life through fostering?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Yeah. The three that we adopted, sometimes when you say you've adopted three, people think, well, maybe they were a sibling group, but they were at different times. They each were in our home as a foster child. And so it was in foster care for two, three years maybe. And then they became adoptable and we adopted them. We knew they would be very difficult to be adopted because of their challenges. And their special needs are different mm-hmm. one to the other. But yeah, that's how that happened. It wasn't like
seeking it out,
yeah. But it naturally, organically mm. happened. But when we look back at it, we think it's kind of interesting that all three of them were in our home as an infant.
Oh.
They came into foster care very young.
Mm-hmm.
One right from the hospital.
Wow.
And so even though they have a lot of these struggles and even they have trauma issues, we actually were the only home they knew.
Mm. Wow.
I think we just made the exact same noise.
We did.
I'm going to go out of order a little bit here.
Go for it.
Because it flows. The title of the podcast is Mended Futures. Mm-hmm. Are you the product of a mended future? Like when you think about your childhood,
mm-hmm.
what about your childhood prepared you to be the chief strategy officer and to be dad and grandpa and
or a minister?
Right. And a minister. So are you a mended future?
Yeah. I really enjoy this podcast and I enjoy you guys exploring that. So I wasn't thinking about that. And I wouldn't just naturally think that. I don't think I've ever thought that I'm a mended future. And when I look at my childhood, I don't have high ACEs number, mm-hmm. The specific types of childhood experiences. But trauma isn't the only thing. Part of trauma or a type of trauma is the attachment issues. And I didn't really understand that and learn that until, you know, I actually was in ministry and was trying to learn and grow myself. I got licensed in my 40s, so, you know, spent a lot of time before then. But when I look back, I see that was the challenge in our home. And without going into details, because of my parents, their insecurities and their issues, grew up without a very strong attachment.
Hmm.
Needs were met, and, we had a lot of family life, but there really wasn't the unconditional love. Mm. Everything you had to earn attention. So when there's not a healthy attachment, then kind of depending on personalities, people have different responses. And so there's the anxious response. Mm-hmm. And so that's the child who grows up trying to find or win or get that attention or that attachment. And then there's the avoidant. And I was the avoidant. Mm. I just learned how to be okay. Mm-hmm. Didn't need it, didn't want it, but I was just okay. And so I didn't know that then, and I couldn't have verbalized that at all then. Mm-hmm. But later in life, I realized, you know, that's why relationships are difficult. Mm-hmm. It's difficult for me to trust. And everything kind of comes with a price, you know. And so don't share a lot of personal information, because in growing up, anything somebody knew was used against you, or mm-hmm. you were controlled by it. To me, this was illustrated in just a kind of a bizarre way. I don't remember how old I was, but I was an adult. I was married. We had children. And at a family gathering, myself and my four siblings, we were just talking, and it got kind of personal. And as we're talking, we realized that each one of us growing up felt like we were the black sheep. Hmm. Each one of us felt like we were the one that was not, you know, included. And so that was just eye-opening, mm-hmm. is that we all kind of experienced that. So back to your question, mended future in that regard, because through what I've gone through and we've gone through, learned that and learned how to heal that, you can learn how to do those things, even though they don't come easy. Mm-hmm. And so in a sense, that's being mended. Mm-hmm.
I would say there would have to be a certain amount of mending to happen with attachment styles in order to be a foster parent.
Right. I was thinking, wow, if that's your history and you are really aware of that as you're a practitioner, how have you tried to make sure that you are attached to and your children feel attached to you as a parent?
Yeah, I am looking back. That's part of the reason I think we made a lot of mistakes and things were difficult, and we learned that. Without that awareness, you just wonder why things aren't going as well as you would like. As I said, I became licensed in 95, and at that point, our oldest was 14, and our youngest was. She had just come into our home, so she was an infant. And that's when I was beginning to put these things together and realize. And that started helping us meet the needs, mm-hmm. of some of the kids that were in our home. And so I'm sure we made mistakes, or I made mistakes with our children, our biological children and adopted children early on. But with that awareness, just that trying to be intentional. And because I'm sure some of those early years, I was somewhat the aloof dad, not necessarily emotionally available. And anyway, so over time, healed that. And so one of the things that's really gratifying and just a joy is now watching our kids raise our grandkids. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to tear up here, mm-hmm. but as I watch them nurture my grandkids and see those bonds and those attachments, I feel like there's some mended futures.
Mm-hmm. That's powerful. You're not the first senior leader mm-hmm. to say something very similar to that. And mm-hmm. I think for those of us who are listening to your story, it's hopeful mm-hmm. because in a generation or in two generations, you can see something almost completely healed. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And even that thing wasn't blaringly obvious to you for so much of your life. Like the Lord brought that to you as something that you saw needed to be healed. And he's also allowed you in your lifetime to see that it has been healed. I think that's really special.
That's a blessing, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would have argued that I didn't have any childhood issues, but
That's an impossible statement. Yeah. For those of you who don't work at 518, Jim is famous for using a mug every day that says professional grandpa.
That's right.
So that's the Jim that I've always known. So to hear that you have ever, you know, had some struggle with developing relationships and connecting to people was, it's news to me. So it's very hopeful to know that you have gotten to this point. Mm-hmm.
Hey friends, let's talk about real impact. Imagine a single mom struggling to keep her family together or a child sleeping on the floor because they don't have a bed. Now imagine you being able to meet that need. That's exactly what happens every day through Care Portal.
Care Portal is a platform that connects real-time needs from local children and families to people like you, churches and individuals who want to make a difference. With just a few clicks, you can step in, meet a need, and build a meaningful connection that changes lives.
This isn't just charity. It's the church and the community coming together, showing up in love and action. So if you're ready to turn compassion into action, visit careportal.org and see how you can be a part of the movement, because connection changes everything.
Visit careportal.org for more information on how to sign up and start meeting the needs of children and families in your own zip code. Once again, that's careportal.org.
Thank you, Care Portal, for sponsoring the Mended Futures podcast. I think we should acknowledge that when you were hired, the organization was Patrick Henry Family Services, mm-hmm. and the history was children in group homes. Mm-hmm. And the group homes were in family settings with house parents and cottages. And the counseling part is fairly recent.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea was counseling for the children and their families and reconciliation when they would go home to families. Mm-hmm. Talk to us a little bit about becoming 518 Family Services, and what does that mean to the Chief Strategy Officer?
It's just powerful. You mentioned when I came, yes, the focus was the counseling. I saw it as an opportunity to help an organization that I really knew very little about before then to develop effective, efficient counseling, multiple sites and multiple communities. And I had a real passion for that. Back when I was in private practice, that was one of my hopes. I was trying to develop it. And so this was a great opportunity. The fact that it was ministry was very special, obviously families and children. But that was the focus on that. But then as I got here and got involved, I was actually in the meeting. I was one of the eight that was in the room on July 3rd. We're forgetting the year right now, but
a day that will live in infamy.
Yes,
we hear about the July 3rd meeting a lot.
Yes, I was in the room that mm-hmm. day, and that was powerful, and that was a big step when we realized, or they realized from the history that we've got to move in this different direction, and it's got to be about the families. And
was that meeting the decision to close the group homes?
No, that was the meeting where Vision 30 was born.
Okay.
At that time, we kind of joke about the name of it at that time. And, mm-hmm. yeah,
because it was so far away.
Well,
right?
at that point, the name of the vision right. was zero cubed. And there's a reason. There was a reason why that was the name of it, but there's also a reason why it got changed.
Because it's not mathematically coherent.
Right. Yeah, the background of that was Mr. Day's vision, and it was that, you know, I can't remember now exactly right, but what it was, but there was three levels of things that would zero out, that mm-hmm. they would no longer exist. But the basic gist of it was, why can't we move towards a place, a community where foster care is not necessary, mm-hmm. where the need for foster care is eliminated? What was interesting was around the table that day, and what fed this vision was the fact that we all had had experience doing foster care. And we had seen the problems and the issues. And so this wasn't like anti-foster care. It was like, there's got to be a better way. There's got to be, different solutions. And so that's where that commitment came from. And so your question, becoming 518, I've been part of this process as we've walked out Vision 30. And early on, we realized that the name Patrick Henry Family Services was not going to be able to serve us as we walk through that. But we wanted to be very cautious about changing that and how we change that. And so took a little while, and God led us in that direction. And then there was a specific 2-year process that we walked through. And as strategy officer, I was kind of the point person of a lot of that. And again, it was a God moment when the name 518 became clear in our minds. Mm-hmm. And so now your question, becoming 518, is so meaningful to me because it's not just changing the name. It's not just, renaming yourself. It's becoming what God has called us to be. And so becoming 518 is to become an organization that is rooted in the ministry of reconciliation, is rooted in God's heart to bring reconciliation to that which is broken, and such that our goal then is about prevention and not just intervention, and about reconciliation or long-term solutions, not just managing crises or managing problems, or it's about the healing. And so becoming 518 to me is this ministry that God has been directing for all these years, becoming what his vision for us is. Mm-hmm. And that's a ministry of reconciliation.
Mm-hmm. Is the way you led Patrick Henry Family Services strategically different from how you try to lead 518 Family Services?
I don't think so. Because strategy has, some basic aspects. When I said I was strategic then, there was some major issues, some problems that they had experienced. And so there was some things that needed to change immediately, but there was also some things that needed to change, but immediately would not be the best way. Mm-hmm. And so as things moved and we moved through some steps along the way and changes, a lot of people didn't realize that was in my mind or my plan from the beginning, but it was just strategically walked out. And so I think that's kind of who I am, but that's how that was lived out there, kind of changing things or moving in a direction to solve some problems. Mm-hmm. This is a little more forward-looking in that it's long range. Mm-hmm. It's not just responding to problems, but it's following the vision and moving in the direction of the vision. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite things to do, and of course I'm introverted, so it's not going to be with a crowd or with a group, but one of my favorite things to do is to play chess. Mm-hmm. I love to play chess. And that's strategic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's all strategy.
All strategy. Yes. There's some games that are all luck. You throw the dice. Mm-hmm. There's some games that is strategy and luck, like backgammon, mm-hmm. where you throw the dice, but then you still can strategize. Chess is strategy. And looking at 3 or 4 steps moves ahead. Anyway, mm-hmm. that's just kind of the way my brain works.
So I almost laughed out loud a minute ago as you're talking about gradual, long-term. Talk to us a little bit about the dynamic with the senior leaders here at this organization.
Because we just talked to Claudia, where she's saying that it's so hard for her to be patient.
There's a very different dynamic because Claudia wants things done yesterday, mm-hmm. as Taylor said, and Claudia wants to move faster than the speed of light. So talk about how you all, as you're becoming 518, as you're talking about shepherding and leading ministries, and you're really digging into this idea of reconciliation. Talk about how you work with folks who are very different.
Allison, it's amazing, actually. It's God orchestrating, because there's different reasons why we came together, each one joining the staff. Mr. Day has led the way. He saw the need to have more people at that level and to build the team, and he was willing and humble and opening that up. As you said, Claudia brings that energy and that focus, and willing to try anything. Let's just do it. Of course, Jeff brings the questioning and examining and thoroughness.
You've been nitzed.
Yeah, I wasn't going to say that, but ask every question, and then that opens up more questions. So I see myself as Mr. Day has a long range view. He's vision. I see myself as kind of being the bridge. Mm. Is that I like the everyday, the details. I like the movement, the change, but there's got to be rational, strategic ways that mm-hmm. we move from what we're doing right now to where we want to be. So hopefully I bring that piece mm-hmm. To kind of how do the things we're doing right now today on a day-to-day basis with all those details, and some things need to move fast, but how does that all fit together to make sure we get to where we want to be or where we say what our vision is? So that's, mm-hmm. that's kind of how I view my role among the senior leaders.
I've heard Mr. Day describe himself in his interview process for his current position as the change candidate.
Yes.
He was not secretive about his plans should he be chosen for that job. Did you know right away when you came what his vision was? Because I'm, listening to you, you've had this strategy sort of in you from the beginning, and that there's just like a kismet sort of thing that is connecting. At what point did you two realize that like you're so aligned in that way?
Good question. Not sure that I would have a specific answer just over time. One of the things that fascinated me when I started getting to know Patrick Henry Family Services, actually I did some consulting with them for a few months. Mm-hmm. I mentioned some of the issues and problems we were having, and they invited me over to do some consulting, kind of from the business side of things. And that's when I began to learn some of the people and some of the vision. And to hear Mr. Day talk about how he saw the counseling as being the way we're going to move into different communities, and how he talked about how he saw it changing and unfolding, that was fascinating. That was really, really cool. But as I got to know it more, I saw how big that was. Mm-hmm. But I tell you what is amazing is to see how what we are doing and what we're about to do was in his mind 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. When we go back and read some of the stuff that he wrote or that he said,
So he
saw it. He mm-hmm. was, God was leading him as the prophet to see it.
So there have been some pretty huge changes. Within the last year, you led the walking out of the rebrand mm-hmm. and the name change. Mm-hmm. And that was a long process. Mm-hmm. When it was finally said out loud, how did you feel?
Oh, wow. Yeah, that was pretty special. Mm-hmm.
It was also Jim's idea to announce our new brand, 518, on May 18th. So that was kind of genius.
Yes.
Well, it was my idea.
Yes, it was. I'm a genius.
Yeah, I'm a genius. Thank you.
I wasn't going to say that. But those kinds of things, I just see God's hand in it. And there was some really special things about that, because part of the thought process was, okay, how do we change the name? How do we announce it? How do we let the community know? And that kind of seems like that should be a very special thing. But how do we do that? And where do we do that? And so the question was, do we just throw a big party and ask everybody to come to a party and congratulate us on what we're done? that wasn't right. And so the idea that came up with was, let's give the community an event. We'll do it. We'll provide the event. And then at that event, not the whole event, but at that event, then make the announcement. Mm-hmm. And that would kind of show the balance of, you know, we're here, we're intentional, but we're about the community, but it is about the community. And so that's where ThriveFest mm-hmm. came from. And that was, yeah, that was our idea, or my idea. See, it's hard for me to say my idea. It's
okay. You're just such a collaborator. You're so humble.
We'll reiterate, it was Jim's idea. There has been a recent big announcement weeks ago about a new building. How do you see that as the strategy officer? How do you see that as an opportunity for the community and the organization?
Yeah, and I'm not the point person on the project of you know, mm-hmm. obtaining the building, and a lot of work's going to be done in the next 2 years of walking out the design and that. But from a strategic standpoint, is to it's to really help us think through it, and to see the balance between you know, making the building space optimal for our team, but also making it very warm and inviting to the community, making sure that it's very efficient, but that it's mission focused. Envision that even when you walk into the building, that the mission will be very clear, what we're about and who we're for. So I'm not sure exactly what my specific role will be as we walk that out, but always mm-hmm. just kind of behind the scenes, the chief strategy officer is looking for consistency, helping us be consistent. One of the things that I said to myself through the years, I don't know when this started, but way back early in ministry, is doing various things, you know, working with foster care and working in the churches, and kind of what's my personal mission. And the wording has changed a little bit through the years, but it's basically, I want to help individuals, families, and organizations move towards their values. Hmm. And actually, I didn't add the organization until recently mm-hmm. because it was always helping individuals and families move towards their values. A lot of times people aren't even aware what their values are. Yeah. So part of the process is helping them to discover that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you say, or we say we're faith-based. What does that mean? Mm-hmm. How do we move towards mm-hmm. that?
And you dive in.
Or working with a family, you know, they want to be such and such, or it's important to them, but they're having trouble walking that out. So helping individuals, families, or organizations move towards their values. So that's internal as well. So watching what we're doing, mm-hmm. watching what we're planning, are we moving towards our values?
Are we doing what we say we're doing?
Yes. Hmm. Yeah, that's integrity.
That's powerful.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm not out front and saying that all the time, but that's kind of what my role is, or what I see my role is just paying attention to that.
Mm-hmm. In leading people toward their values, in leading organizations toward their values, what are your non-negotiables? What do you avoid? What is your sort of tactic in leading people strategically?
Well, I don't know, maybe several, but the one that popped in my mind when you were asking that is one that some people aren't real comfortable with, or they don't like, and that's it's to take time to think it through, to consider all the possibilities, to look at it through, you know, through the lens of innovation. Look at it through what are the possibilities? What am I not thinking about? What that kind of thing. So yeah, my non-negotiable is to try to not do things immediately, but to do things thoroughly.
Mm. That's neat. I heard somebody, as you were asking that question, I heard somebody say recently, when you're thinking about values, why do you weep? What was the last thing that made you really angry? Mm-hmm. And sometimes those are your values.
Those are ways to discover them.
Yeah. My number one is safety. If mm-hmm. something's going to send me into orbit, it's going to be something that's unsafe. And I had not heard anyone ask those questions. So I was always unsure about my hypervigilance and why am I always safety mm-hmm. zoo. Mm-hmm. That was really interesting mm-hmm. to hear you talk about values mm-hmm. and that was thoughtful.
was really
yeah. What are your values, Jim?
Oh wow. I guess my primary value is to walk out my relationship with the Lord and to be real and authentic with that. And it's also very important to me to be thoughtful and to have fought through things, to be helpful. That may be a major one. And that kind of goes with my personality types. I don't need attention. I don't need the accolades. But I do need to know that what I'm doing is meaningful to people, is helping them move. Mm. And so that's a big value to me.
So as you're sitting here talking, I want to share with you, I've known you probably a year and a half. Mm-hmm. And there are already two things that I've learned from you that I think about on a regular basis. And I'm gonna repeat them back to you. You said one time about the motive, assigning the motive. Mm-hmm. Tell the folks listening about assigning the motive.
That's very, very important because it caused a lot of problems. And I think that probably developed through counseling, working with couples, doing a lot of couples work, and just recognizing that, you know, that something's happened and they have that issue, they have that thing to work through, whatever that was, something said, something done, something not said, not done. But I discovered, and I'm sure I'm not the first person, but I realized that that's a problem, but the bigger problem is what they're telling themselves why the other person did it or didn't do it. It's the assigned motive. You know, you hurt me, but I'm adding to that, you hurt me because you don't love me, or you hurt me because you know, whatever. And so the assigned motive actually becomes the bigger problem, the harder thing to deal with. And so it just applies in every interaction, every relationship, is be careful about assigning motives and get motives clarified. And a lot of times people don't even recognize their own motive, but let's figure that out rather than me decide and assign to you that you ignored me because whatever.
Mm-hmm. And are you interacting with the person based on a motive you assigned on an off day? Mm-hmm.
Forecasting the responses.
Right. And so I think about that constantly. Yeah. So thank you for giving something a phrase for me. And Taylor knows I collect phrases.
She loves a phrase. She sure does.
And then the next wise words from Jim. That could be like a whole
segment.
A segment. wise words from Jim, and I got this secondhand, was do not commit to something that you will resent later.
Hmm. Actually,
that was credited to you. No,
that is,
so you told someone, and they
typically
told me
I say it the other way.
All right, so you say it.
I typically point out to people, don't resent something you've committed to. You made the decision to do it. But so many people spend time, okay, all right, I'll do this, and then they just resent it. You know, if you've thoughtfully made the decision, it may be sacrificial. It may really not be, helping you or whatever. Don't waste the time resenting it. You said you would do it, do it. So don't resent something you made a commitment to do.
And for me, I am not always thoughtful. I have been an impulsive decision maker in my days. In my 40s, I'm trying to be different than I was when I was younger. I like to sleep on things now. So I love the fact that you're saying, you know, thoughtful, intentional decision making. But just about a month ago, someone else shared that piece of wisdom with me, and I thought, oh my gosh, if I sleep on something and I agree to be on a board, or if I agree to this committee, or if I agree, I can no longer complain about it.
Well, you know, we can recognize when we're into it that this probably wasn't the best decision, or I'm going to learn from this and do things differently. It's just a waste of energy to resent it. Now, to be honest with you, Allison, is often when I say that to somebody, and I try to do it kindly, they don't like it. Because sometimes we really like our resentments. We like to, we like to keep repeating them to ourselves because it makes us feel right, or makes whatever. But no, you know, if you said it, you're going to do it. And I catch myself in that because when I'm adult children ask for something that's probably unreasonable, and I decide, okay, I'm going to do this for them, then don't resent it.
Yeah, if you're going to agree to it, just don't resent it.
I have one more question.
Yeah.
518 is an overtly Christian name. So you're digging in to the Christian roots. Talk about being an organization, a Christian organization that emphasizes mental health, emphasizes counseling. What does that mean to you?
I think it gives us an incredible opportunity to help people heal or reconcile, because there's, for many people, there's a negative history, negative feeling, wounds even about Christianity or the church. And talking about assigned motives, there's a lot of people that assume that if you're Christian or faith-based, and that means you're judgmental, or you're very dogmatic about certain things. But that's really not what faith-based is or what Christian is. And so we have the opportunity to show that Christian, being faith-based, is about who we are, about how we see ourselves, how we see other people. It's not about, you know, a particular doctrine or a particular do's and don'ts, even though that's, you know, there's some do's and don'ts biblical. But it's I said earlier about one of my values is walking out the relationship. That's what I see this is just showing the community that we are faith-based, and that defines who we are and describes how we treat people. But that doesn't mean we're, you know, that we have these judgments about what other people are doing. It's leaving space for God to work. It's overt in that it's part of our name. We're claiming that. We're stepping forward with that. But it's not about, you know, trying to change people's thinking. It's about loving them and being here to help them heal, help them on their journey. Kind of like we have the opportunity to walk with people on their journey for a period of time. And as long as they're moving towards their values, or moving towards health, or moving towards a healing place, that's being faith-based. That's being Christian.
Thank you. Thanks for being here.
Well, thanks for letting me share.
Thank you for listening to the Mended Futures podcast, hosted by Allison Jordan and Taylor Melvin, produced by Liam Chafin, Sue England, Allison Jordan, Robert Day, Sully Jugar, and Taylor Melvin. You can find us on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to like, share, and subscribe to see more.